freedom is the reality that we live in a time where we continue to feel it appropriate to target and discriminate against the transgender community. And so we're all really complicit in a culture that tells trans women they're not real women, that tells trans men they're not real men. And that is the paradigm that allows this to happen.
Chase Strangio, I want to thank you for being with us, being back with us. He recently wrote a letter to the South Dakota lawmakers, which reads in part, quote, "If I were a student in South Dakota, chances are I would not survive into adulthood." We'll link to it at democracynow.org. That does it for our show. Friday, February 19th, marks the 20th anniversary of Democracy Now!'s first broadcast. To celebrate with us, I hope you'll take a photo or a video, tell us who you are, where you tune in, why you need Democracy Now!, and post it online with the hashtag #HappyBirthdayDN. We'll feature your birthday message on the show. I'm Amy Goodman. Thanks so much for joining us.
You are listening to KBOO Portland, where the time is now 8 o'clock. Coming up next is Voices from the Edge Talk Radio with our host, Joanne Hardesty. Today's guest is Bobin Singh from Oregon Justice Resource Center. We'll talk about the recent evaluation of the Multnomah County District Attorney's Office and the role that race plays in criminal charging decisions.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of Wamba at the Analog Cafe, Friday, February 19th at 10 p.m. Wamba is a Portland-based band that mixes traditional West African rhythms from Ghana with jazz, funk, and Afrobeat styles. Friday, February 19th, there will be a special two-set performance. The evening starts at 10 p.m. at the Analog Cafe, 720 Southeast Hawthorne Boulevard in Portland. More information is available at kboo.fm on the right-hand side of the homepage under Community Events.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud sponsor of the 39th Annual Portland International Film Festival hosted by the Northwest Film Center. 97 feature films and 62 short films from all over the world will be playing through February 27th, all over Portland. There are also special focus programs, including Global Classroom, a Made in Oregon shorts program, PIFF, After Dark, Again. That's the 39th Annual Portland International Film Festival screening films at multiple locations throughout Portland until February 27th. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
Good morning, good morning. I'm Joanne Hardesty, and welcome to Voices from the Edge. Before I get into our program this morning, I'm so excited to have Bobin Singh here in the studio. I have two announcements I want to make for you. First, next week, there will be a breakfast with Jim Wallace. He has a new book out called America's Original Sin, Racism, White Privilege, and the Bridge of a New America. He will be interviewed Monday morning on Celeste's program, but the breakfast will be at the First Christ Church Monday the 22nd from 9 to 11 a.m. It's located at 1314 Southwest Park Avenue. For more information, you can contact Adam Phillips, and you can reach him at adam@christchurchpdx.org. Again, that's Monday the 22nd of February from 9 to 11 a.m., and you do have to be registered to attend. So that's my first announcement. My second one is the Oregon Senate, the Oregon Legislative Body and Judiciary Committee will be considering a bill today that, in my opinion, is a rush to fix a problem that honestly, doesn't exist. And the bill that I'm referring to is House Bill 4087, which is being sold to the legislative body as a bill to protect officers who are involved in deadly force cases. You may know that with the occupation and burns, there was one of the occupiers was shot and killed, and that is the rationale for taking the public's right away to know who, what officers were involved in deadly shooting cases. As you think about Keep Notice, if you think about all the people who have died at the hands of the police, it is really important for the public to know who those officers are as soon as possible. And so I would encourage you to contact your state senators and encourage them to protect the public's right to know in these situations. Don't hide behind giving police once again secret status that the public doesn't have access to. If they kill someone in a performance of their job, they have a responsibility to be accountable for that. And if they did it appropriately, then it would be no problem in knowing who those officers are. And so, okay, I'm done with my public service announcements for this morning. I want to welcome Bobin Singh to the program. Good morning. Welcome.
Good morning. Thank you for having me here.
And you are the executive director of the Oregon Justice Resource Center. And what is your title with the Oregon Innocence Project?
So I'm the executive director of the Oregon Justice Resource Center, which is a public interest law firm that works on criminal justice reform.
Okay.
The Oregon Innocence Project is actually just one of our programs.
Oh, okay.
So, but it's our flagship program, and, you know, it has national recognition and national okay. branding, so people, you know, just identify the Oregon Innocence Project as almost a standalone
right.
entity. But it's actually just one of three projects or programs that we have.
And what are the other two?
The other two we launched last year. One of them is called the Reentry Law Project. We've partnered up with Mercy Corps Northwest, and we provide civil legal services to individuals at their transition center. So we run a legal clinic in which we provide civil legal help to individuals returning from prison to Multnomah County. And the clinic is now operational about once a week. It was twice a week, and it goes back and forth. But the idea is to integrate civil legal services with wraparound services so that individuals who are reentering mm-hmm. can get the assistance, you know, from the navigators at the transition center and also get legal services rather than being referred offsite or to some other organization or entity.
Because that's normally huge when people are transitioning out. Most of the time, they owe child support, they mm-hmm. owe court fines, the license may have been suspended, they may have tickets, So that's a service that's been desperately needed for a long time.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, the fact that legal services, you know, integrating legal services into social services or in reentry services is new or sort of innovative. Shocking to me, the project director, Julia Yoshimoto, her background's in social work. Mm-hmm. She was a social worker for a number of years in Hawaii assisting women who had some pregnant women who had substance abuse issues. And one of the things their clinic struggled with was trying to get access to legal services for mm-hmm. those women. And so in part, her motivation to come to law school was to become an attorney, then go back and, you know, try to push forward this sort of innovative model of including civil legal services as part of wraparound services. Mm-hmm. You know, she came to Portland and was able to get a fellowship post-law school working with Red Lodge, which provides, you know, services to Native American men and women incarcerated here in Oregon. Mm-hmm. And from that experience, we were able to partner up with Mercy Corps. And so, yeah, you know, it's an innovative model. I think the fact that it's innovative for legal services is shocking.
Right.
You know, it's it was shocking to me, and I think, but it's needed. And I think you're starting to see more and more of that way of thinking of how to integrate services, especially legal services, into wraparound services. And as you mentioned, the issues that men and women face returning from prison mm-hmm. Are diverse. I mean, the issues that we've seen, you know, is no two issues are alike. Mm-hmm. I mean, you've heard the term collateral consequences,
right.
which are those barriers that are set up or that exist. If you have a criminal conviction, you're prohibited or disqualified from participating in society in a certain way. But what we really noticed is it's not so much the collateral consequences, but those issues of poverty that are exacerbated by incarceration. Mm-hmm. So there's issues that, you know, people face simply because they're poor, don't have, you know, very much income. And when they're incarcerated, you know, their debts, their fines, their, you know, ability to be able to retain custodial rights with their children or visitation rights, so on and so forth, occupational licensing, all these things become, you know, just...
enormous barriers.
Mm-hmm. other the project, third one? The third project. Sorry, you get me talking about this. I can fill up the whole hour.
No, I love it. I love it. No, this is great. I love people excited about what they do.
The third project that we have is our Women in Prisons project, and this grew out of the work that Julia was doing with Red Lodge. She works with the Native women through Red Lodge at Coffee Creek and provides civil legal services to the women there. Usually, you know, they're about 12 to 14 months from reentering. They participate with the religious services Red Lodge program. And so she goes in and meets with the women and tries to identify those issues while they're there and tries to take care of them before they get out. And, you know, it's the same sort of thinking. It's all these issues that have been exacerbated by incarceration, how to take care of it so the women don't have to, you know, deal with that when they get out, and giving them the best chance to reenter. And then part of that, what we noticed is that there aren't very many organizations or programs dedicated to women who are intersecting with the criminal justice system. So what we decided to do is blow out that program or project into a full-on Women in Prisons project. So what we're trying to do is trying to understand better those issues that women face when they're intersecting with the criminal justice system, primarily through a legal lens. There are a lot of social service programs out there that assist you know, women, and really great programs. And so we're not trying to replicate or duplicate that, but what we're trying to really do is trying to understand, you know, those laws that drive incarceration rates for women, those barriers that women may face in the law when they get out, you know, those legal issues that are unique to women. And so what we found is that there's a lot there. And so, yeah, so our three programs or projects are the Women in Prisons Project, our Reentry Law Project, and the Oregon Innocence Project.
Wonderful, wonderful. So if you're just joining us, I'm talking to Bobin Singh. He is the Executive Director of the Oregon Justice Resource Center. And we're going to now start talking about this recent study of the Multnomah County District Attorney's Office. You participated in a press conference last week to announce these really, really disturbing findings. So tell us a little bit about, this was a MacArthur Foundation grant that funded this study.
So this is the racial and ethnic disparities report on the criminal justice system in Multnomah County. And it actually involved all the county stakeholders that were involved in the criminal justice system. So not just the district attorney's office, but, you know, the public defender's office participated, the county commissioners participated, law enforcement participated. And this was part of a grant making process. So the MacArthur Foundation gave grants to 20 jurisdictions this past year to come up with proposals to reduce the use of jail beds in each jurisdiction. Part of that is that each of these jurisdictions actually did these racial and ethnic disparity reports, as I understand it. We found out about this, and the county then released this information and made it public. What's unique is that I don't know that the other 19 jurisdictions that have this have made this public. So I think there's a bigger story here. But what we did find with this racial and ethnic disparity report, or RED report, as we've been calling it, is that there are gross disparities across the criminal justice system that, from beginning to end, what you see is that, as I've been saying in the press conference and in the media, is that if you're black and you're Multnomah County, you're going to be punished more severely. And that's, there's no way to conclude
sugarcoat
otherwise.
Sugarcoat it, yeah. Right. And I saw something that said that you are 600 times more likely, if you're African American, to be, what, prosecuted, have harsher outcomes. The 600% stuck in my mind. But I don't remember what that was in relationship to.
Yeah, so the report says, you know, a number of things. The way the report was broken up is that it looked at seven distinct decision-making points. So I'm trying to pull up the report right now and take a look at it. But the decision-making points are arrest, prosecutorial, prosecutorial charging. Let me see. I'm sorry.
It's okay. It's okay. I have it. I have the report here.
Okay.
I'm not sure what section that piece in. But that's okay. We can go back to that. But I mean, there were so many things that jumped out at me in this particular report. One was that if you just look at the basic numbers, when they talk about the rate of people that are in jail, so it was just a snapshot, mm-hmm. right? They did a count of one day in 2014, it was June 2014, and what they said was, for every 1,000 white adults in Multnomah County, there are 1.5 white adults in jail. For every 1,000 black adults in Multnomah County, there are 9.2 black adults in jail. For Hispanics, the number is for every 1,000, 1.8. For Asian Pacific Islanders, for every 1,000, 0.4. And for Native Americans, for every 1,000, 2.8. Mm-hmm. And so if you look at the chart, the African American numbers are 8 times as high as any of the other numbers, just for the people who are actually in the jail.
Right. I mean, the disparities are profound. So, you know, just looking at this, going back to what this report looked at,
right.
Different decision-making points were referrals to the DA's office, arraignments and prosecutorial charging, assignment of court-appointed counsel, pretrial release, cases diverted, sentencing and post-conviction, supervision or probation or parole. I mean, these are essentially the decision-making points or the areas that they looked at.
Throughout the entire department, right? Mm-hmm. So from the very first, when they first get the charging document, mm-hmm. all the way through the process.
Right. And so essentially what this report highlights is that there are four areas where disparities are being exacerbated the most. So first is the referral level, where blacks are referred at 440% or 4.4 times the relative rate to white individuals in Multnomah County. And that's quite significant. So what you're seeing is that there's something wrong with policing.
Yes, you know? Yeah, right. Because people don't get to the DA unless they've had an encounter with a police officer prior to.
Right.
And because this is in Multnomah County, we can assume that Portland Place and Gresham Place are included in these numbers.
Yeah, it's countywide.
Right.
So, you know, the other numbers that sort of stuck out to me, is some that you had mentioned, is that the second point is a second level of disparity is that there's a lower rate of blacks that were diverted from the system. So overall, 29% less likely to be diverted from the system.
Right.
Another sort of exacerbation or, you know, profound disparity that we see is prison sentence, where you see blacks are 700 times more likely or 700% more likely to go to prison than white offenders. And the final point is probation and parole revocation. So you see blacks are 7.5 times more likely to be referred to jail or prison for parole or probation violation. And these are quite significant when you think about it. I mean, it's basically saying, again, that if you're black, that more likely you're going to go to jail, you're going to go to prison, you're going to be referred to the DA,
right.
You're less likely to be diverted out of the system. And, you know, I think what sticks out for me is that this is system-wide. You know, there's disparities at the front end that come in
right.
with policing, but that what you see is that system stakeholders like the district attorney's office are sustaining those disparities and, in fact, in some instances, making them worse.
Right.
And then on the back end, when you have, you know, parole violations or the sheriff's department or DCJ involved, that you're seeing that blacks are more likely to be popped for violations or, you know, those
types. And treat it more harshly when there is a violation.
Yeah. And what sticks out to me is that, you know, the seven unique decision-making points that the report identifies is that in each one of those decision-making points, there's a level of discretion that's
right.
involved, some subjectivity. And what we see through either explicit or implicit bias, you know, it's not necessarily that people are outward racist or things like that. But what we see is at those decision-making points is that there is some sort of discrimination happening,
mm-hmm.
you know. And I think that's the most profound thing, is that we have this level of discretion that exists at each one of these decision-making points, and it's not transparent necessarily.
Right.
There's not very much oversight. We're not understanding exactly how those decisions are being made.
Right.
But what we do understand is that when those decisions are being made,
right.
that the black community in Portland is by far being treated far more severely.
So if you want to join the conversation, give us a call at 503-231-8187. That's the number to call, 503-231-8187. I wish I could say I was surprised at the numbers. I think I'm surprised at how severe the numbers are. I worked for Bev Stein back in 2000s, in the early, in the 1990s and 2000s. And Bev Stein and Vera Katz, as mayor of the city of Portland, Vera Katz was mayor, Bev Stein was chair of the county commission, and the local public safety councils monthly had to address any disparities that took place within the Multnomah County criminal justice system. So you had a mayor and you had a county chair that every month required a report. The disparities decreased significantly in that time period. So it's really troubling to see that those disparities have not only gone back up, but in some cases have actually skyrocketed. Mm-hmm. And it goes back to the accountability piece, right? Who's responsible for holding the DA accountable for how they charge? And we will say that that's an independently elected position. Mm-hmm. However, you know, before Mike Schrunk was there for 30 years, and we now have his hand-picked replacement that's replaced him. And this is really, really, really troubling. We do have a caller, so we're going to go to the phone line. Good morning, Francis. Welcome to KBOO. Good morning.
Hi. Appreciate you, what you're covering today. And I appreciate your guest, and I also appreciate the fact that someone did a study to validate what many of us have been knowing for many years. Mm-hmm. And the question is, what are we going to do about it?
That is that's the big one.
You know, everyone is acknowledging that this is happening, and it's been happening for years and years and years, all over this country, really.
Right.
And how to change it and address it is the question. Many of us have been attempting to do that for a long time.
That's right, but Bobbin's going to answer it for us today. Bobbin's going to tell us exactly what we need to do.
And I appreciate his work, actually. And so having known someone who just recently got out of prison after many, 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 many years in prison, the Mercy Corps services were invaluable to him.
Okay.
And it's amazing to me that the corrections division that is supposed to be there to provide services for community services for people under their jurisdiction is pretty much still just now something to monitor and put you in jail if you do something wrong, but anything else you need, forget it. Mm-hmm. And that's really sad. But it's supposed to be community corrections, but it's community policing in another form.
So that's another part of this whole system that Bobbin's been talking about, right? We've got
right.
so many points where decisions are made that impact people's lives. So,
yeah. And something that I hope we can address one day is that I think you have before, the old parole system
right.
in the state of Oregon. There are some people right now, and one young man I know in particular, who are dealing with that parole board that does not want to parole people because at some point
they'd be out of a job.
They'll be out of a job.
Yep, because there's
that's a conflict of interest that is really tragic for the people who have to come before them.
That's
it. No, is this Black History Month? Is KBOO doing anything about it?
About what?
Is there anything going on at KBOO regarding Black History?
You know, that's a good question. I suspect it is, but I don't know.
I haven't heard a thing.
I don't know. I will have to look at the schedule. You too. Go online. See what's coming up on KBOO.FM. I'm sure it's there.
Okay.
Thanks, Francis. Appreciate the call.
Thanks for what you're doing. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Have a good day. 503-231-8187 is the number to call. Good morning, Don. Welcome to KBOO.
Hey, Joanne. This is Don.
Good morning, Don.
Hey, you know, you're right. The district attorneys, they always go after the low-hanging fruit.
Right.
I'm an advocate for men with disabilities because we're also primary target of the system.
Yes.
When the DOJ and Amanda Marshall put together their settlement,
yes.
I was very critical why they weren't including African-Americans and other racial minorities in that study because they only wanted to look at people with mental disabilities.
That's right.
And I thought that was very selective and calculated.
Well, you know, they did a bait and switch. They told us they were going to investigate race.
Yep.
And then at the end, they actually investigated mental health, people with mental health issues.
Yeah, the whole thing. Everything they're doing is just part of this calculated...
For show.
Yeah. So, but here, let's talk about a case, because you're talking about the district attorney, and I'd like to hear your guest comment about this. Is last Friday, Jeremy Pallaro, P-A-L-A-O-R-O, was given a slap on the wrist for what I consider to be aggravated sexual assault. And this is a cop. This really shows how the DA works with these people, because Larry O'Day has a comment in the paper about he said, well, we're glad that the district attorney had resolved this, came to a resolution. But he didn't say they came to a fair decision.
Right.
Because this cop last winter, and I would encourage people to go and look at Maxine Bernstein's article July 22nd last year, and she talks about what happened in that hotel room. But he went to this woman's house for a domestic, or where she was at for a domestic violence complaint. She had injuries. There was a fight, obviously. And she was sent back to, she went back to her hotel room. Well, this cop starts contacting her by the text a few hours later, so she's still traumatized. Then he comes up talks her into having him come over. He comes to the hotel lobby. He's got a backpack and he's wearing shorts, but he doesn't tell her there's a gun in the backpack. He doesn't say anything about it and ask if he can come up to her room. So she invites him up. First thing he gets in the room and he pulls out his gun and lays it on the table. Well, that's an implied threat of violence. Anybody who sees a gun, even the threat of a gun, look at Lavoie Finnegan, it just automatically puts people on edge. So when he pulled out the gun and laid it on the table, then he went and took his clothes off. And then he got a shower. He was in a towel.
He had a massage, all that good stuff. Yeah. He was allowed to quit
his job. With 18 months probation, this guy committed aggravated sexual assault. This is outrageous that Chris Ramirez, he's the DDA who let this guy walk. And when he pulled that gun out in that woman's room, she was traumatized already from the earlier incident. Took advantage of her situation. At one point, she says he raised his hand towards her, which is, he's got a gun on the table, he's raising his hand, and he asked her, did that scare you? So this guy is a total creep. He needs 20 years in prison. And here's an example of how the DDAs and the DAs all work to protect despicable cops.
So you are absolutely right. I mean, it's a great example of police officers in general, but specifically police officers get lesser charge, lesser accountability than regular people on the street. And this is a good example.
Because the fact that he's not going to be registered sex offender, is he?
No, he's not. Yeah, he's not going to be required to register as a sex offender. And he probably gets his retirement. I don't know enough about that.
I'm sure. And then the other thing is the legislature wants to protect these kind of cops, their identities.
Yes.
They don't have no problem going after anybody else. And,
Talked about that earlier, Don.
Yeah, thank you.
I did talk about the House bill that's up for a vote today.
Okay.
Because it's important that people know, right, that this is a way to shield bad police officers. House Bill 4087 is the bill that you're referring to. Thank you so much for your call.
Okay.
Have a great day. 503-231-8187 is the number to call. Any comments from the last couple of callers?
Yeah, I think Frances, the caller, she made a... I mean, I think she hit the nail on the head. What do we do next?
Right.
What are the solutions to this?
Right.
What the report shows that this is a system-wide problem.
Yes.
And that, and I also think she brought up a good point, which is that it affirms what communities of colors have known for decades, justice system is unfair, that it treats people unfairly.
It's unjust.
It's unjust. There's a justice system for if you're white,
right,
and apparently Asian,
right,
and
right.
Then there's a different justice system if you're anything else.
So I always challenge the numbers for the Hispanic population, because I don't believe them. They're always really low,
mm-hmm.
and they imply that there's not a disparity in how Hispanic population is treated by the police. But community experiences tell me otherwise. And so I believe that data continues to be lost in the white data because of how Hispanic populations are counted through the census process.
No, I think that's right. I think this report, if anything, is probably underreporting the significance of the problem, especially when it comes to Native Americans and Hispanic, because, mm-hmm. you know, one of the things that we need to understand is how people are being identified in this report, the demographics, and how it's being collected. And a lot of times, what you see is it's not self-identification, but identification by, you know, corrections or the police or, you know, the district attorney's office. And oftentimes, if you, you know, look white, even though you may be of Hispanic background or Native American background, they're not counting you as such.
That's
so I do think that we need to have the question about what to do next is, we need to have this type of reporting regularly, in my opinion.
Annually, right.
Annually.
Yeah, yes.
And that, you know, not only in Multnomah County, but I would argue in the five major counties here in Oregon, at least as a start. I think, as you suggested earlier, if you're required to report and be transparent about this stuff, that helps reduce the disparities in itself, because you have to acknowledge that it exists.
That's
you're reporting on it, then you're conscious of it.
Right. And your bosses are actually expecting you to do something to eliminate the disparity, right, as compared to what we have now. Because at that point, every once a month, people had to be responsive to what are you doing to make that happen.
Yeah. I think another point that you made earlier is that, you know, the district attorney is an elected position here in Oregon.
Yes.
But we don't treat it as such. We don't treat any of the district attorneys by and large as elected positions. They're individuals who end up staying in office for a very long time, go unchallenged. Not very many people vote on the position. Mm-hmm. And the district attorney is probably the most powerful person in our criminal justice system. And I think their professional membership organization, the Oregon District Attorney Association, is probably one of the most powerful groups when it comes to criminal justice reform at the state legislature.
Yes.
So one of the things that we can do is start paying attention to who our district attorney is, trying to understand what that individual is about, what their positions are on criminal justice issues, especially racial justice issues, how they're engaging with communities of color. I think these are all really, really important things. And as just one thing that individuals can do is start voting and paying attention to what's going on with the district attorney's office. What I will say is, with this racial, ethnic, and disparity report, of the seven decision-making points, four of them are somehow involved or the district attorney or the district attorney's making those decisions.
Right.
So, you know, four out of the sevens, that district
the buck stops with them.
In my opinion, and we just honestly have no idea what goes on in the office there,
I think that's part of why the disparity is so large, because those decisions are made behind closed doors. When voters pass ballot measure 11, all of a sudden, 15-year-olds and up are negotiating with professional attorneys in the district attorney's office about whether they're going to be charged with a Measure 11 crime or something a little less than Measure 11. Mm-hmm. And there's no requirement that parents are there or anything, because if they're being charged as an adult, they are treated as an adult. And it's the most ludicrous system. We have lots of callers stacked up, so we're going to go back to the phone line. Good morning, Aaron. Welcome to KBOO. Good morning.
Good morning. How are you guys doing this morning?
Doing pretty well. All fired up here.
Yeah, and I really appreciate it. I used to work in law enforcement. I was a cop and I was a jailer, but I'm from Houston, Texas, so I worked in the system.
Okay.
My point is that when I moved here, I'm no longer in law enforcement, and I do like Portland, but it's also quite frightening, because being from Houston, I would watch the media in the morning, and I think the media is complicit in this, and I would see young people of color, Latinos, Mexicans, Black people, and they were being arrested, and it was almost like a shame factor.
Mm-hmm.
I watched the news here, and like today, I watched the news from 4:30 until 7, and I saw no people of color, but I did see, you know, this white person committed a crime, et cetera, et cetera. So what I'm trying to say is that it almost seems frightening when you hear the numbers, that it's like subversive, because if it bleeds, it leads.
Right.
So are these just minor crimes? Crime, and we know about the disparities. You know, if I got arrested with possession of marijuana, not only am I going to be sentenced, but I'm going to be sentenced harsher than a white counterpart of mine. So, and I think that's the scariest part, is that, I'm not trying to say that, you know, people should be shamed, but, you know, where I come from, I'm going to see several Black males on the news in the morning for committing crimes.
That's right.
I don't see that here.
Right.
And so it almost seems like, well, where is this happening? And is it just happening and being swept under the rug? Because if you listen to those numbers, that's shocking. Even from where I'm from, like from the South, I'm like, that is shocking to be in quote unquote liberal Portland, Oregon, and hear that type of disparity in the numbers.
Exactly. Well, let me say one thing about the media, and then I'll give Bobbin a chance to weigh in. I know that Portland Police Bureau has full-time public information officers, and their job is to send press release out all day, every day, telling people where crime is, who's committing crime, and what they should be fearful of. And so most of the time when you turn on the evening news, it leads with gang shooting at wherever, right? Story at 11. Yeah. And then if you actually listen to the story or read the news article, what you find is the only perspective that's presented is a police perspective. So they didn't talk to neighbors that said, oh, yeah, Bobby's been in gangs for a long time. They didn't talk to mom and dad who said, yeah, we've done everything we can to try to get them out of gang. They've talked to a police officer, and the police officer has created the entire narrative that we, the public, get. And so to me, you're absolutely right. The media is complicit in selling this fear of black people to the general public. So, Bobbin, you want to weigh in?
Yeah, I mean, I think you raise a really important point. This red report that was created by the grant-making process or by this independent researcher is just a summary of the information that the counties have. So, you know, one of the things that we are asking for is that the county release the data and information that created this report. And I think that, you know, that will identify the issues that you're raising. I mean, it will identify the answers to the questions that you're actually asking. Is that, what are the crimes that individuals are being convicted of? What are the crimes that individuals are being charged up? What are the trends, you know, over the past number of years in which blacks are being, you know, charged and convicted with? What kind of crimes are they being charged and convicted with? Are they serving longer jail sentences than their white counterparts?
For the same crime.
For the same crime. And, you know, I think once we understand the information that actually created the Red Report, or get access to it and have an opportunity to really analyze it, I think what we will see, we'll have a better understanding of why the disparities exist. And but I think that's right. I think the numbers are shocking and are profound. And I think once we get a better idea of really what's going on, I think it'll be even more profound. Because if you think about that, this is just a summary of the information. If you go and look at individual crimes, I think what you'll find is those disparities may be even more profound. So let's say, I'm just making up something right now, but let's say if you're, you know, loitering or something like that, you know, is a white person then being, you know, given a violation, whereas a black person ends up serving, you know, 10 days or 20 days in jail or something like that. But so I think looking at those individual crimes, the categories, the charges and things like that will help us understand. And I think my gut feeling is that you really will see profound disparities in certain classes of crimes.
I bet.
Well, I appreciate it, because I think with such a small, I mean, this is a city with such a small black population, so to hear those numbers, it's scary in a lot of ways. But I appreciate it, guys. Thank you.
Thank you. Well, I mean, I think what's scary is that the district attorney's office has been absolutely silent after this report's come out. Have they commented, responded anything about this data?
Well, I think there was a quote in Maxine Bernstein's article, but the district attorney hasn't really come out. And for that matter, none of the county leadership has really come out and said anything to my knowledge. Actually, the only people I think that have commented on this is Lane Borg, who's the executive director of Metropolitan Public Defender. And he's been a champion of trying to get people to pay attention to this report. I mean, I think he's offended by what's going on here. And he himself acknowledges that he's part of the problem. And I think that's a very different approach than what you're seeing the other county stakeholders or leadership taking, where I think in you already see in the Oregonian article where Rod's, you know, sort of giving some sort of answer that doesn't really say anything, in the sense we need to study this more. You know, it's law enforcement that's giving us this disparities and something else happening at sentencing. But I think what we really need to do is push our county leadership to take ownership of being accountable for these numbers. And, you know, as far as the other people that have commented on this, you know, it's been Roberta Phillips, who's running for House seat 43. She's mentioned and talked about the Red Report. And then also David Shore, who's, you know, sort of one of those third party candidates in the mayoral race. But even the mayoral candidates haven't said anything.
So even the major candidates haven't actually
Not to my knowledge. And when I, and they may have, I don't know, they may have made a comment here or there, but, you know, these numbers are so horrific and so shocking. I expect nothing less than a press conference in front of, you know, some state or city, I mean, county or city building with the entire leadership there saying, we're
going to fix this.
But first saying, we're causing this. Right. We are contributing to this problem. And this is a significant problem that is destroying and impacting, you know, people in this county. And the disparities, I mean, the numbers are just, I mean, so shocking and so, you know, terrible that it's just surprising that no one said anything about it, really.
Not surprising if you are African-American and live in Multnomah County.
True.
We're going to go back to the phone line. Good morning, John. Welcome to KBOO.
Good morning. Great program, Joanne. And,
thank you.
I thank your guest. A wonderful job. My comments are, I'm mostly white, and hey, it's so obvious to me that this Malheur County deal with the famous militants, the double standard, as my good friend Eugene said, applied to justice in this country. In fact, it's an example of how much institutionalized racism we have to fight.
Yes.
These guys, white racist supremacist landowners, in my opinion, racist, trying to take we the people's land for themselves for more land, and these idiots that don't are probably not landowners following them. And thank you very much for bringing up all this injustice, because it needs to change. And I'm really enthused about the election coming up, and I hope people will register to vote now and get out and vote, because we can change this thing. The youth are really fired up, and it's really neat to see a good movement going.
Well, yes, I absolutely agree. People have to vote. I sure wish we had better things to vote for, but, you know, we have what we have. So, but we have to vote. I mean, I'm a child of the civil rights movement. I would never not vote, even if I have to hold my nose sometimes to do it. Thank you so much for your call. Appreciate it. Exactly. Have a great day. Thanks for the call. I want to give a number. If you want to contact your state senator today to talk to them about House Bill 4087, the easiest way for you to do that is to call the Oregon State Legislature. The number is 1-800-332-2313. Again, that's 1-800-332-2313. When you call, they will ask you your zip code. They will then identify your state senator, and they will connect you directly to their office. It is that simple to say, don't be stupid again. Do something that makes sense. We need disclosure, not less disclosure. Back to the phone line. Good morning, David. Welcome to KBOO.
Hi, thank you for taking my call.
You're
great
welcome.
Subject. You know, I don't know if you guys ever noticed that during censuses, the Euro culture still tries to hold on to their power. I'm Asian, and if you ever see in a census, they don't just want to know if you're Asian. They want to parse you down further than that.
Yes,
they
yes.
want to find out what kind of Asian, Native American, Chinese. And then they group us together with Pacific Islanders.
Right.
But, you know, have you ever noticed with whites, just white, it's not French, German, Jew.
That's right.
Eastern European, Russian.
Right.
And so, you know, and that really leads to the bigger travesty is, you know, it's the blacks are certainly being discriminated by the police, but the quiet race, the Asians, are certainly still. The Native Americans are Asian. They're
yes.
still in reservations.
Mm-hmm.
And we see the Japanese internment. My God, I mean, We rounded up Japanese Americans and threw them in jail during World War II.
Yes,
so,
we did.
So, you know, the discrimination goes, it's far-reaching and wide, and it's not just blacks. And we need to kind of get a hold of that and, you know, start with your censuses. Why are we just
grouping whites, but we parse out every other race because we need to find out who they are and where they came from.
So
I'll just leave it at that.
Well, wait, don't go anywhere, because I want to tell you it's even more insidious than that. You may remember that the census changed in 2010, and now you have the opportunity to be as many flavors as you want to be, because the census will only count the first box that you check. So if you happen to be someone who is multiracial, and so, you know, you have native blood and you've got white blood and you have African blood in you, if you check the white box first, all those other boxes that you check don't count in the totals, right?
Well, you know, and that, I'm glad you brought that up, because my daughter is half Caucasian, half Asian.
Right.
But in her, she's in primary school. There's no box for when they say what race she is.
That's right. That's absolutely right.
Yeah, and, you know, I mean, what kind of trauma is that for her when people are asking, well, what are you? And, you know, you try and figure out what you're supposed to be,
right?
How they pigeonhole you. And, you know, it's certainly a Euro culture, and we got to break that down. And, you know, they still have their grasp on all the Asian countries. In Korea, we're still in Korea. The Vietnam War, the Japanese internment. Oh, my God, the Chinese, we're just rattling our sabers against the Chinese. So there's a really deep-seated racism against Asians in addition to others.
Well, you know, I appreciate you bringing that up, because I always make sure to remind folks that, you know, the Latino numbers are totally undercounted. I appreciate you reminding us that the Native numbers are totally undercounted and maybe even inappropriately counted. And then if you see the Asian Pacific Islander numbers are really, really low, I would even question that, because I certainly know that when we talk about gangs, there's a narrative around Asian gangs that play out in the city of Portland. And so I think all the numbers are suspect, and I think Bobbin said it best. What we can assume is that this is an undercount, because everything wasn't counted in this report. So as egregious as it is, I think it's only the tip of the iceberg.
Right. And then what is an Asian Pacific Islander? I mean, what is that? You know?
Well, I think it would be appropriate for you to call Apano and have that conversation, which is the Asian Pacific Association of Oregon. Asian Pacific Islanders, Asian Pacific Association of Oregon.
I mean, does it mean that the Asians hang out with Pacific
Islanders? My name is Bennett, and I'm not in it. I'm not going to have that conversation. You have a great day. Thank you so much for your call.
Yeah, thank you.
Thank you. Coming up today on The Boo, at 9 is Press Watch, the news you're not supposed to know with Teresa Mitchell. At 9:30 on Fight the Empire, host Pear speaks with former CIA analyst Ray McGovern about Russia, George Kennan, the CIA, and the deep state, and more. At 10, Chris Andre hosts Air Cascadia, and at 10:15, Flashpoint features excerpts from the documentary film The Black Panthers, Vanguard of the Revolution. We want to thank UK Boo members for your generous support. Missed the last drive? No worry. Go online, click the tip jar, go to kboo.fm, click the tip jar, and you could be a member like that. We're going to go back to the phone line. Good morning, Sunny. Welcome to KBOO. Good morning.
Good morning, Joanne. Good morning to...
Bobbin?
Yes, yes. Thank you for this important program, and also providing that number for access. My eyes were kind of shocked open about 12, 13 years ago. I don't know, maybe longer. Out getting gas pretty late at night in my brother's North Portland neighborhood, visiting from elsewhere. Pulled into the stoplight, you know, waiting for it to change, and looked over at my son, told him, oh, we're headed home shortly, you know. He's around 12 years old, and he had such a horrified look on his face as he was looking in the opposite direction from me that I turned my head, and I saw that a Multnomah County cruiser had pulled up a deputy, and he had silently gotten out of his vehicle and was standing and leaning across the top of his car with a shotgun aimed what looked like right at us.
Wow.
And I was like, what? And then I thought, well, what's going on? And I looked over the other way. Oh, because I also heard a clatter of a lot of young people running down the street. And on the opposite corner from us was a young black man, just frozen, just a nice looking, oh, maybe 15-year-old guy, just really nice looking, you know, sweet faced. And a group of girls were running towards the intersection, crying and screaming, don't shoot him, don't shoot him, that's not him, he's not the one. And they got down on their hands and knees and were begging this deputy not to shoot them.
Wow.
And at that moment, the light changed, and we took the opportunity to get out of the intersection and also try to follow the law.
Mm-hmm.
And we pulled off a street, and my son was horrified because there were men out in the front yard working on their car late at night, and he was afraid that they might look really rough and tough. And I said, well, we're turning off the street. It was young black men that were working on their car out late at night. And I said, we're all right, don't worry. And we had to roll quietly, slowly down the street because the cars were parked really close and I didn't want to run into anybody's car at that moment. And I rolled down the window and I said to them, you know, there's some serious police action going on out there. You guys be careful. And they said, all right, well, thank you, peace, peace. And I said, you see, we're all right, we're okay, we're fine. And we found the nearest freeway exit and we left.
Mm.
But
So the moral of your stories are...
The moral of my story is, you know, the veterans fought so hard. Let's remember the people that have gone up the cliffs at Normandy in World War II.
Mm.
And, you know, let's think about, my goodness, if we allow police to shoot left and right, and we're protecting and covering up their identities long enough for the public to forget the story.
Yes.
What have they fought for? What have these veterans fought for? What are we all fighting for? And let's stand together and hold on to our freedom. Let's not hand it over to people that don't want to follow the law. And God bless, once more, God bless the good cops.
Yeah, I wish that good, my definition of a good cop would be a cop that didn't allow their colleagues to shoot unarmed people and abuse their authority. I haven't met one yet.
Ah, well, that's something to think about, too. And I just think, you know, we've got to stand together and hold on, and we will. We're just, oh, the last thing I was going to say, let's make sure that Willamette Week does this, and I'm sure Willamette Week will, and the Mercury, that they publish the votes of
oh,
the
yes,
legislature
yes.
on this, because you know what, if they vote for this, they've lost the election.
Well, I have to say, I was very disappointed to hear that the ACLU was neutral on this bill.
Oh, I
you know, this is the second time that
wow.
legislation that significantly impacts the public safety that this Karen ACLU of Oregon has actually come out on the side of the police, on the side of shielding cops, of not providing public information. They did
wow.
the same thing on the body cam bill. They
wow.
also are doing it on this bill, House Bill 4087. Mm-hmm. I am so disappointed in the ACLU of Oregon. I don't know why they have moved into this very, very conservative mm-hmm. approach to protecting our civil liberties. But I'll have that conversation with the ACLU sometime soon.
I'll just say this a little bit.
Okay, but I got several
societies over our culture is increasing, and people get in with other people and then they have to do their bidding.
That is very true. Thank you so much,
yes.
Sunny. I always appreciate you. You have
I appreciate you, Joanne.
I'm feeling the love. Have a great day. Who else we got? Come on,
hi,
Bruce.
This is Bruce.
Hello, Bruce. Good morning. Welcome to K-Boot.
Good morning. How are you?
I am fabulous. How about you?
I'm doing well. I had a question. Maybe you could help me understand.
Okay.
When my daughter went, my daughter is I guess you would call her mixed race or
okay.
biracial.
Uh-huh.
And when I went to register her into her grammar school in Portland,
right.
the designations require that she is either black or white.
Yep.
And there is no other.
Was there another category?
Yeah, other.
Uh-huh.
So here you have the Portland this is what I don't understand. How you've got a school system that is spending probably millions of dollars on racial sensitivity.
Courageous conversations, yes.
Courageous conversations.
Yes.
I'm reading the book right now to try and understand exactly how it's supposed to work, because here we had the principal of the school saying to us in a Courageous Conversations meeting that she'd been on this for 10 years. And, you know, I thought 10 years, and it just seemed, you know, I asked the school, what are you doing to push back against this? Because what you're requiring me to do is say that since my daughter has so many drops of African blood, she's African, or because...
Or ignore that, African...
She's white. Right. But really, what you're demanding of me is that I call my daughter other.
Yes, yes.
I don't think that's a nice thing to say to a kid, that you are an other. It's actually, according to Courageous Conversations, exactly what we're supposed to be fighting back against. So I was wondering if you could give me any insights into how do we push back? I mean, you have, on the one hand, this apparent effort to try to tackle issues of race, and on the other hand, it's right there institutionalized in the first form you have to fill out.
Yes, and that's what I will tell you. I will tell you that it is built into every institution in the United States of America. And so I encourage you to pick an institution and then organize around that institution. There are folks that are actually organizing around just that topic now. The Black Parents Initiative, the Portland Parents Union. So there are a couple of organizations that are organizing specifically around what happens at Portland Public School, and there are others, right? So none of us can do this on our own. It needs an organized effort. But, I mean, you're absolutely right. It is a bad message we send kids from the first day of school that they have to fit into a box. And if they don't fit into that box, that then they are an other. That is not what we want our kids to grow up believing they are. They are not an other. They are just perfect the way they are. But every system, whether it's our healthcare system, it does the exact same thing. And so it's not you, but you've got some work to do before your grandbaby gets to high school.
Well, I sure do, because, you know, they were, you know, well-meaning people, of course, but,
yes.
You know, the path to hell is paved with good intentions, they say. And, you know, here you have a school. The school my daughter goes to is completely overloaded, and it's basically a completely segregated school. And I said, how on earth are you supposed to show the kids in your school what is going on with race and what is going on with this construction and the history of institutionalized racism when they are in fact in a segregated school and experiencing the advantages of a segregated school in terms of financial, et cetera, et cetera?
Oh, you
and
know,
I also said, how are you going to hope to educate kids in a segregated school? It's an oxymoron. You're not
yes.
going to educate kids on any subject regarding race,
sir,
by segregating them.
Sir, I'm going to have to go because I could talk about the problems in our education system for the rest of the day and still just hit the tip of the iceberg. We will be doing a program on education sometime in the next couple of months, and I hope you'll be listening and call back and engage us when that conversation happens. But you have a great day. Today, the institution is the district attorney's office. We'll get to the education system again. It's got a lot of challenges. And I understand they're going to be asking us for a bucket load of money again. And I can't imagine anybody giving them any. But that's another day's conversation. Thank you for calling. Have a great day. And we're going to squeak in this last call. Hello, Pamela. Can you be short, sweet, to the point? We're almost out of time.
Absolutely. Just wanted to give a shout out. Thank you for mentioning Apano to that listener asking about what is Asian or Pacific Islander.
You're welcome.
There is Pacific Underground is a new show. APA Compass is off the air, but Pacific Underground just came on the air and premiered in January. So
excellent.
Now we have a slot every fourth Friday at 11 a.m. on KBOO.
Yay. Excellent. Yes, I figured, you know, it should go to the horse's mouth rather than try to get it from me. Thank
Absolutely.
You. Thank you so much for your call. Appreciate it.
Sure.
And so, Bobbin, the last word. How do people contact you if they want more information about the three programs?
Right. So the Oregon Justice Resource Center, you can go to our website at ojrc.org, and there's information on how to contact us there and how to understand the work that we're doing and opportunities for volunteering to get on our listserv, to attend events, those types of things. So visit our website. If you're able and want to support this work, give a donation. We could always use support that way as well. It's actually the best kind of support. Just real quickly as we finish up, I think the most important thing that happened here is that there was a county-wide analysis of the criminal justice system, and it was done by an independent researcher. And what they said is that there are profound and grotesque disparities that exist.
And so the grade would be an F. I am Joanne Hardesty. It's been a great to be with you today. Thank you, my fabulous engineer, Steve. We'll see you next week, same time, same place, same station. Thanks, Bob and Singh, for being here.
Thank you.
Have a great day.
Stand up for your rights. Get up, stand up. Don't give up the fight.
Preacher man, don't tell me heaven is under the earth. You don't know what life is really worth. It's an all that glitter is gold. After story had never been told. So now you see the light. Hey, stand up for your right.
And good morning, KBOO Portland is what you're listening to, Portland's community radio station. Yeah, coming up in a half hour, join us for Fight the Empire, where today host Per Fogering speaks with former CIA analyst Ray McGovern on Russia, George Kennan, the CIA, and the Deep State, and more. At 10 o'clock, Chris Andre hosts Air Cascadia. At 10:15, it'll be Flashpoints, today featuring excerpts from the documentary film The Black Panthers, Vanguard of a Revolution. And at 11 on Between the Covers, host David Naiman speaks with Lacey M. Johnson about her memoir, The Other Side, her reconstruction of the events surrounding a harrowing act of domestic violence. But first, coming up next, it is Press Watch with news you're not supposed to know with Teresa Mitchell. That's coming up right after this on KBOO.
On February 20th, from 7 p.m. until 10 p.m., Grassroot News will honor the memory, legacy, and life of Malcolm X. Join us for the music, the memory, and the deconstruction of Malcolm's political career, his split from the Nation of Islam, and the course of actions that led to his assassination 51 years ago on February 21st, 1965. As Ozzie Davis eulogized,
"A prince, our own